This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by NK Seeds. NK Corn and Soybeans offer growers unique choice and greater value, helping to deliver maximum whole farm ROI potential. Harvest restarted in some locations on Tuesday, but it was not pretty. And more will give it a go today, and it will be a struggle. But with the wind that's coming later this week, today's farmers on the forum from Missouri, Illinois, and South Dakota, they'll be hustling to get things out of the field.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us again this morning. It's a farmer forum on today's AgriTalk, and I'm really looking forward to this one. We'll get a harvest update from one of the areas that has had a really tough time, even just getting started. Ryan Wagner from Northern South Dakota will join us for today's show. And Ryan is also a broker for Bolt Marketing up in Britton, South Dakota, so we might work a little bit of market chatter into today's conversation. And we'll get an update from Western Illinois. Rock Ketchnig will get us up to speed on what's happening in the I-80 corridor through the western part of Illinois. And Andrew McCray from Illinois will be joining us. Yes, that Andrew McCray, the host of American Countryside. Andrew is also the host of the Farming the Countryside podcast on the AgriTalk app. If you haven't checked that out, Andrew is doing a fantastic job with that podcast. But Andrew is also a farmer in Missouri, and we're working him into the Farmer Forum rotation starting today. So, harvest reports, domestic demand, cash market, exports, weather, tariffs, local happenings. We've got all that and more on the agenda for today's forum. If you've got a question or a comment for today's show for any of us, give us a call at 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. If you'd rather let us know what you're thinking via Twitter, just make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. Right now, let's turn it over to Clinton Griffiths, get an update on the news. What's going on, bud?
Just working our way through another week here. Kind of a midweek checkup. But harvest restarting, that's been pretty interesting. You know, markets have been interesting. We had a really good day on Monday, Tuesday.
Awesome day.
Yeah, not quite as strong, a little bit the other direction, but a little green out there today. I don't know. What's your read on this? Is it all harvest? Are we at trade? What's going on?
No, I think a lot of it on Monday had to do with the fact that we had a couple of boats that were loaded out of the PNW. Well, actually, three boats loaded out of the Pacific Northwest that were headed for Asia. One went to China.
Yep.
Two went to Vietnam. And there was also a boat out of the Gulf that was loaded and headed for China as well with soybeans. And I think that had something to do with it. But then yesterday, they kind of reevaluated it and said, you know what, these were purchases that were made a while ago, so this isn't any new demand coming to the market. So then we sat back a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is interesting. These trade issues and trade talks continue to drive a lot of the conversation. In fact, overnight or late yesterday, the Trump administration announcing it will start formal trade deal talks with the EU, Japan, and the UK. Those negotiations could start within the next few months. And talks with the UK would happen, of course, not long after it leaves the EU. And under fast-track rules, the U.S. can't start trade talks until 90 days after notifying Congress, which is kind of what this point was, is saying, hey, we're going to notify Congress. They've got 90 days. And the administration then has to provide what it hopes to achieve in those talks about 30 days before they start. So we should get kind of a parameter here, in another couple months. But, I think the entire ag industry has been waiting for some of these talks to start, and there's been a lot of encouragement for bilateral discussions.
Yeah, well, yeah. And now that we've got a template that evidently works, Clinton, I think they want to apply that, take the basics from the Korean agreement, the basics from USMCA, combine them into some other bilateral or multinational when we're talking EU, and get as many of these agreements done as they possibly can. So the momentum is there. And when we're talking trade talks, these agreements didn't happen that long ago. Some people are thinking that, well, maybe we're slowing down a little bit here. I don't think so. This is more evidence that they've got some momentum going and they want to keep it as hot as they can.
Well, it has been a big issue, and it's been something that, we've been working on, an EU deal for how long?
I don't know.
5-10 years or longer?
Yeah.
I mean, the last administration was working on one, and along with that TTIP deal. And so, here we are again trying to negotiate some. To me, out of the ones that they listed, that's going to be the hardest one to nail down.
Sure, absolutely. And there's lots of contentious issues when it comes to the EU. Beef might be right at the top of that one.
Well, yeah, and ag is a different story over there. If you thought that new trade deal with Canada and Mexico would get quick approval, well, we may not be so sure. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell telling Bloomberg a vote on the USMCA won't happen until next year. McConnell saying, quote, "My trade advisors say you can't possibly do it under the various steps that we have to go through. Waiting until next year for Congress to approve it could set up a battle with Democrats if the party wins that majority in the House midterm elections next month." So that's another one of those things. In 2019, we could see a lot more maneuvering here.
Oh, absolutely. And, Wiesmeyer has been saying for a long time that we're not going to see any movement on ratification of USMCA until we get to 2019.
Yeah. One last interesting thing, Chip. Texas A&M coming out with some research saying that they may have found a way to make cottonseed edible. They've created a new cottonseed that can be eaten, ground into flour, even made into like peanut butter. And part of it is they found a way to take out the toxins in the cottonseed that made it inedible. So they say it could open up a whole new food source.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
Yes, it is wild. Why not, huh?
That's right.
Why not?
Little cotton candy out there.
Yep, absolutely. All right, thanks, Clinton.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, let's bring in Margie Echocamp, editor of Ag Professional. Margie, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Chip. Doing well.
Good. What is going on at that elevator up in South Dakota?
This is a cool story from our friends at the AgTegra elevator in Folkton, South Dakota. They now have a mural painted on three sides of the elevator. It's 110 feet tall. An artist out of Australia actually came and did it. And if folks want to see pictures, go ahead and go to the Ag Professional Twitter as well as Ag Professional Facebook. I just reposted so folks can see the pictures because it is changing that small town skyline for sure.
Yeah, well, not only that, but I'll bet it's changing some traffic flow, isn't it?
Oh, so Folkton is a town of 700 people, and the committee that helped commission the mural actually also included in the plans three different viewing stations so folks can go and park and see the elevator and its mural without necessarily disrupting the traffic in and out of the elevator.
Yeah, and I'm sure that in an area that is known primarily for farming and pheasant hunting, this added attraction has got to be kind of cool for the town.
Yeah, as a local farmer and rancher, Troy Hadrick said that they are just so proud that now art is also part of what their community is known for. And it really is a striking, all the photos I've seen, it is just such a striking image added to the landscape there and a wonderful asset for the community. They're reporting that they're already having travelers reroute their trip so they can come to Folkton and see this very cool mural.
Well, you mentioned Troy. If he had anything to do with it, I'll bet it's pretty doggone cool. Margie, thanks so much.
Thank you, Chip.
All right, that is Margie Echocamp, editor of Ag Professional. Farmer Forum coming up next. Andrew from Missouri, Rock from Illinois, and Ryan from South Dakota.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
Here's one from a corn grower in Indiana. How can I be sure all my crops are getting the necessary micronutrients from the fertilizer I'm using?
Micronutrients are called micronutrients not because they have a micro impact on yield, but because they're needed in micro quantities. When each plant needs some, but not a lot, uniform distribution of those micronutrients becomes very important.
Through fusion technology, MicroEssentials combines four key nutrients into a single nutritional balanced granule for season-long fertility.
By delivering uniform distribution, MicroEssentials ensures balanced nutrition at the plant level, making it easier for every plant to reach its full potential.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit MicroEssentials.com.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pest.
And today we've got Joe Bowman, corn product manager for NK Seeds. He's here to talk about the newest hybrids in the NK corn portfolio. Joe, it's that time of the year. We're taking one crop out. We're making decisions on the next crop already. And so inputs are on everybody's mind. One of the biggest decisions is what to plant for seed corn. What can farmers expect from NK corn in 2019, Joe?
Yes, there's a lot of stuff exciting going on with NK seed corn. First, from the harvest results that we're already starting to see come in this fall, very, very strong performance out of our current portfolio. And then add on top of that, for 2019, we actually have 32 new hybrid launches that will be launched in the industry for the first time. So, continuing to take the step from a performance standpoint, building on the strong performance we had this year, and continuing to increase the return on investment that growers have throughout 2019 and beyond.
That was Joe Bowman, corn product manager for NK. To learn more, visit nkcorn.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, Farmer-Focused Podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. It's brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Give us a call today. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us. And when you do, make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. You just heard from him, Andrew McRae, Farming the Countryside podcast on the AgriTalk app. Andrew, how are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing real fine, real fine. How are things down in Missouri this morning?
Well, the sun's out, but it's still very wet, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it no doubt about it. Andrew, people know your voice. They know who you are, but I don't know how many of them know that you actively farm. Tell us about your operation.
Sure. So we farm in northwest Missouri, and the farm is split half between crops and livestock. So, we aren't in the fields right now harvesting because we had 9 inches of rain there a week ago, but there's still cattle to take care of. So we do that. We're about an hour and a half straight north of Kansas City in northwest Missouri.
Okay. Is it a feeding operation, cow-calf? What do you got going?
So we're a stocker or background operation. So we have no cows. Okay. We usually buy calves around 400 or 500 pounds. One nice thing about where we live and in Missouri, you've got a lot of cow-calf operations. So there's usually a pretty good supply of cattle, and so bring them in here, have them all on pasture, and then take them up to about 800-900 pounds before we'll sell them. So have them about 5 months probably on pasture.
Gotcha. Put some bone and some growth into them, and then turn them loose into the feedlot where they can put the weight on in a hurry.
Right.
Andrew, tell us about this harvest season down there. I mean, I know it's been tough for all of our guests today, but Missouri, what a growing season you guys have gone through.
Drought was the big thing. Now we fared a little better than some. I talked to when it snowed here 2 days ago, got to visit with some other guys that weren't in the field, and you know, one of the guys that farms probably 45 miles east of St. Joe, that was probably some of the worst drought. He had corn that was at 45 bushels an acre, and he was pleased that it was that. Now, we haven't had anything that extreme, although when you're going through a cornfield, you'll see the monitor go from zero up to 250, and I've heard that story a lot. I would say we're 25 to 50 bushels off average for us, maybe more is kind of where we're coming in, and I think that would be pretty typical for a lot of guys around here. And no beans have been started at all here.
No beans started at all. Good grief. Okay. Hey, let's bring in Ryan Wagner from South Dakota and Rock Ketchnig from Illinois. Rock, how are you today?
Wonderful, old buddy. How you getting along?
Doing just dandy, just dandy. Hey, how's things looking over there in Western Illinois?
Well, Chip, in our particular area here, we've been pretty fortunate over the last rain event. We were to about a 2.8 total, and gosh, was in Macomb Monday evening, and they were to a 6-inch total. So we kind of pick and choose where we go. We're staying on the higher sandy spots, and we were in some low ground yesterday, and we were cutting tracks pretty bad with the carts. We only loaded the carts half full to get them out, so we didn't want to ruin the field, so we moved to the sand today. And here in about a half hour, we're going to switch to soybeans, and from reports coming in, I understand they're kind of wet. But anyway, we're going to put them in a bin and blow air on them. Hey, am I coming in okay, Chip?
Yeah, you sound great, Rock. You sound great.
Okay. I'm on a Bluetooth here and just wanted to be certain sounded good. Yep. We're good here. We're rolling.
All right. Let's bring in Ryan Wagner from South Dakota, northern South Dakota. He told me in an email earlier that he can smell North Dakota from where he's at. So, Ryan, I mean, obviously, if Andrew's had some snow down in Missouri, you've had snow. And do you still have snow on the ground up there?
No, our snow came middle of last week, and it's all melted now, and we actually just got going on soybeans yesterday. I'm on my first round here, just got going on soybeans this morning. We had an overnight low of about 24 degrees, so we had to wait for the frost to melt off a little bit, so it's a little bit marginal conditions, but we're going. So, yeah, we got rid of our snow. It took a little while, but about Sunday it all disappeared, and we've kind of been picking away at corn a little bit earlier this week and started in on the soybeans yesterday.
Okay, so when you say you started in on the soybeans, you mean that you opened up your first field of beans, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we had every single acre of soybeans still out there when that snow hit. We had done we had done some custom work September 28th, and that was basically our only window was that one day. And so now we're on to our own now, finally. But yeah, it's a little bit frustrating sitting having to wait after. There was some soybeans taken out before the snow, you know, in some areas. But ours just, you know, they were still green up until the rain and the snow started. So really no opportunity. But yeah, getting after them now. Sun's shining and we're rolling hard now.
Good. Okay, you guys know how this works. If you've got a comment that you want to make, jump right in there. If you've got a question for one of the other guys on the forum, jump right in there and ask it. But Ryan, I'm going right back to you and those soybeans. You got started yesterday. You guys had such a good bean crop up there in South Dakota this year, didn't you? I mean, it sounded like it was going to be a good bean crop. Is it still all there?
Yeah, you know, ours, we got about 4 or 5 inches here and north and a little bit west of us and into North Dakota. They got 10 plus, you know, up by Valley City, North Dakota, heard about 14 inches, which I don't know how they fared. But our soybeans fared pretty good. You know, 4 or 5 inches was able to take that. We didn't have anything really leaning over too bad that I've seen yet anyway. Okay. So yeah, other than our main problem is just shedding the moisture now, you know, with combine soybeans. 16% right here, 16 to 18 is where we started yesterday and putting them in an air bin. So not dry enough to take them to town yet without getting beat up pretty bad with discounts. So, right. But yeah, as far as coming through that snow, it came through that fairly decent. And even the guys that got hit that I know with heavier snow, they said that they're leaning, but the heads are picking them up pretty good. So I don't think we lost a whole lot in our area anyway.
Good. Good. That's good to hear. Andrew, how's that crop standing for you guys down there in northwest Missouri?
You know, the beans are standing fine. The snow was just 1 to 2 inches, although that was the earliest snow on record ever, I know, at least in Kansas City. So it was, we've had early snow, but that was the earliest snow. You know, some of the corn, you hear some reports that some of it's not standing as well, but we're just going to have to see on the beans. I mean, there's been just very few beans around that have been taken out yet. So right now they look like they're standing well, but who knows by the time we actually get dried out and get in there.
Yeah, yeah. And Rock, what about you? I know that this has been a big concern all across the Midwest, just how this bean crop's going to hold on to its yield. And over in Illinois, Rock, some of the numbers that I'm hearing on soybean yields are just phenomenal. Are you looking for a crop like that?
Chip, we've combined 200 acres of soybeans before the rain. And we will never, ever, ever again, I don't think, see the yields that we have this year. Quite uncommon. Now, you know, if you're in this game, I don't care how old you are, you live and learn every year. I'm kind of curious, and we're going to find out this afternoon, how much yield we have lost when we go back and we go right beside where we left off. And what I'm wondering is just a visual assessment by shelling those beans in pots by hand. Is the size of that bean and how they've changed the big, plump, beautiful-sized soybeans from before, and then what we're looking at now. And what come to mind was a big old blackberry hanging on a plant, you know, jeez, along a fence line when you got good quality and when you don't have good quality, you know, after it deteriorates.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what happens after they got plumped up with moisture again and shrunk back down. Let's bring Ryan back into this conversation, talk a little bit of markets here real quick. Ryan, the big thing that this bean market is dealing with is a big supply of beans, and it's going to be tough for this market to kind of shake it, but it's been performing pretty good, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's actually been performing really well lately. I mean, we're sitting here, what, 50, 60, 70 cents out now off the lows, and with this big crop coming, yeah, that was unexpected. And I think this little harvest delay, too, just from a local perspective, cash market perspective, allowed cultivators to get emptied out from the early harvest. They had some that came off at the end of September, and with space being so tight, I think that, you know, that little two-week lull there allowed them to ship some out, get them somewhere else anyway, or make arrangements to get something somewhere else to make room for this second wave coming. So, you know, I guess there's kind of the silver lining there is I think the cash market may have had a little relief with this harvest delay.
Yeah, yeah. And Ryan, another thing that we talked about yesterday on ATB was the fact that we're moving some beans, not a lot of beans, not as many as we normally do, but we are moving some beans to the PNW, and that's helping us all out. It's a Farmer Forum.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield. The hammer of head and leaf diseases. The number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Oh, hey, bro. I'm an off-brand tractor filter. You know, the one they're practically giving away at the farm store. So a lot of people choose me to filter their precious oil, fuel, or air, but I don't work as hard as your tractor's OEM filter. I am under-engineered and made from cheaper components, so dust and contaminants, they're your problem, brah.
Off-brand filters are not John Deere filters. OEM filters are engineered for maximum performance in your John Deere machine. Don't risk it with anything less.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. Brian, this bean market, corn market, not really doing a lot right now.
No, actually, Chip, just kind of sitting here. Fractional losses in most of the contracts in both of those markets right now. You know, on soybeans, we had the big up day on Monday. inside day down yesterday, and now another inside day so far this morning. So kind of just consolidating after Monday's big move up, and waiting to see, I think, here the, if there's next move, where the market moving news is going to come from.
You know, that soybean meal market, though, continues to be pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's up this morning, just over a buck in most of those contracts. And you know, when we look at the recent chart action, it does give us some hope that, you know, maybe that's strengthening a little bit. For livestock producers, that's not good news. But right. For soybeans, it potentially is.
Yeah, wheat's trying to lead things to the downside today.
Yeah, the wheat market's still kind of just stale, waiting on demand news to formulate. And until we get that, it's going to be a tough go in trying to find consistent buyers in that market. And, you know, we're seeing days when we don't have any kind of demand news at all. There is a tendency to face price pressure.
Got some pressure on the hog trade today.
Yeah, recent strength in there, kind of backing off this morning and showing moderate to sharp losses in the nearby contracts. Probably not too much of a surprise, I don't think. The only surprise there would be the fact that we are still well below the cash index with those winter month contracts, and yet we're facing the sharp pressure this morning.
Yeah, and we've got some pressure on the cattle complex again today as well. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by...
You're listening. Your neighbors are listening. The world is listening. We're talking ag. We're AgriTalk. It's what we do.
All right. If you want to participate in today's Farmer Forum, give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us. Just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. We've got Andrew McCray from Missouri, Rock Ketchnig from Illinois, and Ryan Wagner from South Dakota. Guys, a couple of Mondays ago, I had a chance to talk with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. Asked him if he had an opportunity to ask a question of the guys on the Farmer Forum or the farmers on the Farmer Forum, what that question would be. Ashley, go ahead and roll that question.
What would be three things that you would say from your perspective of an agricultural producer that USDA could do to help you be better, do better, and be more profitable?
All right, Andrew, be better, do better, be more profitable. What would you tell USDA?
Well, my answer may be kind of off in left field for some folks. Because mine gets over to the rural development side. It's just stuff off of my mind right now. You know, I'm sitting here. It'd be great to have rural broadband and get that out and roll it out. It's hard for me to connect. It's hard to do business. And, you know, we're in a day and age where you need to be able to connect and be able to pull down enough speed to, you know, it's part of business, you know. So the rural broadband, and then, you know, something else that's been on my mind, our local town lost its grocery store and a couple of restaurants in the last year or so. And it's just that rural development piece and entrepreneurship. And, you know, we need great farms and strong farms, but you also need those communities. So how do you develop those small towns and make sure that you don't have to drive 45 minutes for groceries or for a doctor, and you've got a lawyer and you got those things around? Those things are important, and they make a difference in your bottom line when you don't have them close by. So yeah, I know that doesn't seem, maybe it's like it's directly related to ag, but it's certainly under rural development with USDA, and there are two things I run into a lot with what I do.
Dude, I think there's a lot of people out there that are listening to what you're saying and saying, amen, brother. that rural development is so important. Andrew, my little small town Waverly, Iowa power company, Waverly Light and Power, put fiber network out to all of the households out in that they serve. And I cannot begin to tell you how much of a difference that made in our connectivity and the way that I do business. I get it completely, dude. Connectivity is important.
It makes a huge difference. And I will give credit. We've got fiber in some of these small towns, and they're getting it to the rural areas. And I happen to be on one of those old mutual telephone exchanges, which actually is great. The mutuals out here, they really do serve the customer. You know? And so that's been good. It just takes some time to get to you, and you just wish they could get there a little faster. And I know they're doing it, but boy, when you've got it, it makes a big difference. Because now it's like, do you watch TV or do you turn on the security camera or do you get on the internet?
Yeah.
You know? What, you got to choose.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Rock, Ketchnik, over in Illinois. What would you tell USDA that you need to do better, and be more profitable?
Well, Chip, the first thing that came to my mind was we're looking at a huge surplus of milk, corn, soy protein. Help us distribute our products, get rid of these surpluses. And I see these sad stories of these third world countries where families, you know, the starvation. You know, let's get that. Why can't we get that product to those places and help take the supply down? That's the first thing came to me in my mind is let's get rid of our product.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent comments. And, you know, we've got a lot of food aid programs that are running. But, Rock, that doesn't mean that we can't do more, especially with some of those products that you're talking about. Every time that I talk to a dairy analyst, they all talk about the mountain of powder that is weighing on the dairy market. And you're right. We should be doing something with it. Ryan Wagner up in South Dakota. Ryan, what do you think? Do better, and be more profitable. What would you tell Secretary Perdue?
Yeah, you know, along those same lines of the rural development, you kind of got me thinking about, you know, we had fiber to our place here 2 years ago, so
that
is power and water, actually. It'd be nice if we had some sort of programs. We'd get three-phase power to a couple of these remote farm locations. That would help a lot with some of these bigger grain systems with dryers and things on the farm. And then also rural water in our area is going to be a concern. Our local rural water provider has a moratorium right now on new bulk customers, and that could really inhibit ag development in our area. So, yeah, just infrastructure things, power and water in our area are the two things that come to mind for me.
Wow. Infrastructure. There it is again, Andrew. I mean, this rural development, I think it's on everybody's mind.
Oh, it is. You know, and, you know, part of it is I go to a lot of different little towns because of my, you know, the other hat that I wear, and you just see that over and over again. And I think there is a real desire in not only farmers but in small communities to do something. It's just how do you help? And how do you make that happen? And how do you attract young people to want to come back and take over those businesses? You know, I think we're headed there. I like to think that. But, you know, I just read an article in Wall Street Journal. It came out a little bit earlier this year. And it said, you know, for the first time, basically, since the Midwest was settled, we're going to have more deaths and births as a whole in rural America. And I know a lot of us have experienced that. Our counties have declined. But still, that's a threshold we've never crossed before. And it just really wakes you up to the fact of, hey, we're literally in some cases dying. So how do you attract those people that want to be out here and have businesses alongside those farms?
Yeah, very interesting. Rock, one of the rural development issues that we've been talking about for the last 15 years or so is the development of the ethanol industry. We got some good news on it with E15 and Trump, President Trump, putting his support behind year-round availability of E15. Seems like that's a pretty good win for the ethanol industry.
Chip, it's amazing how, as you drive the countryside, no matter what state you're in, how ethanol has changed this countryside. You know, you see improvements in grain bins, farm buildings, equipment. It has just totally changed the landscape. And, you know, it's a clean product. It's, you know, it's something that we're very fortunate in our area here. We have one plant 10 miles away, another one about 25 miles away, and and it's just changed the delivery system and a market for the corn in all our rural areas. And yes, E15 is going to be a huge advantage to find a home for more of our bushels of corn.
Yeah, and Ryan, it's changed the flow of grain up in South Dakota too, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's changed our basis here. You know, sometimes we complain about our basis, but you wonder what it would be without ethanol, and it's scary to think about. So yeah, ethanol is huge in South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, up in our neck of the woods. Yeah, it's our main corn market without a doubt. So yeah, ethanol is king up here, and you know, on the soybean side, of course, we're getting a crush plant. It'll be our second one in the state here in Aberdeen, so that'll help as well. We're kind of hoping that'll be the ethanol, or somewhat kind of like the ethanol answer was for corn for soybeans.
Yeah, increasing the local demand for soybeans up there, Ryan, that's been on the agenda for quite some time in that crush plant. When is it supposed to come online, do you know?
Well, fall of 2019, so we're about a year out. I do, it's the AGP plant, you know, based in Omaha, and I do kind of check their bids over in Dawson, Minnesota, and I just noticed the other day that they don't have bids posted for Aberdeen yet, but they do have it listed as one of their plants now. So they must be getting pretty close. We're, you know, everybody around here is hoping they'll buy beans next summer to kind of relieve the pressure for a lack of export market. But I don't know if it's probably going to be a little too late to help for that. But yeah, fall of 2019 is when they're planning on startup.
Very cool. That is so encouraging. And Ryan, you are up in an area where the Chinese tariffs on U.S. soybeans is having a major impact. But are you still feeling okay with how these trade issues are developing, or do you think we need to take a different tact?
Well, I guess my personal opinion is kind of the wrong tact to take in the first place. But, you know, here we are. Now we're here, and so what do we do about it? And now that we're in this position, I just think that, you know, a trade resolution is sooner rather than later would be my hope, that we get something done and open that China market back up again for us. But I'm just afraid, you know, that we've encouraged China to look to other sources, to look to other sources of protein other than soybeans in country, that we could be just doing ourselves long-term damage here. That's going to be tough to undo. So, I just hoping for a resolution sooner rather than later, I guess, bottom line.
Right. Andrew, that sooner rather than later, that's kind of a common theme across the countryside, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah. And it, you know, it's a lot of uncertainty. So how do you market? It becomes big. Mm-hmm. You know, what are we going to talk if we ever open that up? And when it does, beans will jump how much and how quickly will they do that? And so, how do you market the beans that you've already got in the bin or going to have in the bin? And the 2019 crop, it really, I don't know, for me, it just gives a lot of uncertainty on what to do and how to have a strategy for it.
Yeah, Rock. Andrew brings up a good point. I mean, what if we would see some progress with China? I believe there's going to be a relief rally. Do you keep your powder dry and not sell anything, or what do you do?
I think it's inevitable. When they reach an agreement, we're going to see a large move to the upside. And I think if you have storage, as everyone says, you have storage, certainly utilize it. I think things are going to get better. Of course, we have to stay optimistic in this game, and I think we're going to be okay, Chip.
Yeah, have to stay optimistic in this game. I really like that, Rock. There's no question about that. We have to stay optimistic and continue to hope that, like Ryan said, and Andrew, that we get to a resolution with China sooner rather than later so that we can keep the product moving. We're talking with Andrew McCray from Missouri, Rock Ketchnick from Illinois, Ryan Wagner from South Dakota. When we come back, what if farmers do during a rain delay, and what's happening in your area that everybody needs to know about?
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural. You must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this, or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
During the 2018 growing season, Iowa farmer Jason Derschmidt was asked to take a close look at Poncho Votivo 2.0 from planting to harvest. This is his first impression.
I farm just west of Fort Dodge here. I've got about 3,400 acres of corn and soybeans. I started actually farming in 1995, but I've lived on a farm my whole life. I'm the fourth generation Derschmidt farmer in this area. Hopefully it continues on to another generation. I've got two daughters, and hopefully one of them decides at least to come back and give it a try. We're a conventional tillage operation. We do a deep ripping in the fall and then come in with the field cultivator in the spring and then follow up with herbicides. I've started going with Poncho on everything now, either 1250 or the 2.0 this year, so all of my corn's treated. We use seed treatments because we try to plant as early as possible, and the early season root development's the majority of what gets the plant going and determines what it's going to be throughout the year. So anything you can do to improve what you've got early on is a huge improvement later in the year.
Farmers like to get going as early as they can, and it's not always the best conditions when it comes to cool, wet weather here. This new Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment kind of gives them the comfort to get going in the field when they might not want to, but kind of need to.
We've noticed more root growth, more fibers off the roots. Better, deeper roots. We're getting down to moisture and nutrients that aren't available if we don't have the roots. Well, we've probably noticed about a 5 to 10 bushel increase from no treatment to what we're using now. The plant gets up faster, they're more even, they stay greener later in the fall and better plant health late in the season. For four generations, we've invested everything we have in doing the best there is for the land, so that's what we try to continue to do.
We'll return to Jason's farm at harvest to see how Poncho Votivo 2.0 impacted yields.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. We're wrapping up the Farmer Forum. Andrew McCray from Missouri, Rock Ketchnick from Illinois, and Ryan Wagner from South Dakota. Before we get to what's happening in your area here, guys, Andrew, yesterday was a fascinating day for me on AgriTalk. I thought the show was so interesting. We had Congressman Peterson from Minnesota. We had Congressman G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania on the show. They're on opposite sides of the political aisle here, but and it was interesting to hear that there is still quite the division, and this the farm bill is a political bill for 2018. What's your thoughts? I know you've been following it.
Oh, I have. I think I'm probably like a lot of folks. I say frustration. I don't know if that's quite the right word. We've certainly dealt with this type of thing before, but I think that I know, Chip, you and I've probably talked about it before. The division between parties, you know, is seems to be so deep now, and that is hard to bridge sometimes. So I think there's frustration there as well. Obviously, right. You want to see something get done sometime soon. It's just kind of like the bean tariff we're talking about. It just, you know, when's it going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we've kind of got I won't say that we've gotten numb to the political bickering that's happening in D.C., but when it gets attached to the farm bill, that's not normal. I mean, normally it's been such a good bipartisan effort. Yes, there's been some headbutting in the past, but they've found a way to overcome it and get things done. This year, I mean, everybody's planning on a post-election farm bill now.
Well, Chip, you hit the nail right on the head with the word frustration. I guess I could post some of my views, but you'd know what side of the aisle I'm on some of these positions. But anyway, yes, it's all about working together and let's get it resolved, and so we know what direction we're going. We know how to plan out here.
Right, exactly. And Ryan, you know, I thought for a long time it sounded like the holdup on the farm bill was in the nutrition title, but there's some holdup on the Title I, the commodity title, or the safety net provisions that are in the farm bill. That's holding up this effort now too.
Yeah, and you know, that's the part of the farm bill that's of most interest to us. So yeah, there's a few things there. And like everybody said, you know, I think it's obviously going to be an after an election thing now, and it's just going to be a matter of who comes out on top in some of these political races to how it's going to look. But I do think it'll get done eventually, and we need it to get done. I mean, farmers rely on that for our safety net, you know, especially with crop insurance. Without crop insurance, some guys depend on that as well, so. Yeah, right. We could use a little certainty, a little clarity on that going forward. It'd be great.
Yeah, no question about it. Hey, Rock, one of the things that you wanted to talk about is what farmers do during a rain delay. There were some interesting reports of what guys were doing out there in the Twitterverse, but what point did you want to make?
Well, it's much, much different today than it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, if we had about 6 drops on a brick, if I was gone and got home, I had probably 3 pickup trucks at my shop of neighbors wanting to catch up and solve the world's problems. Well, today, we kind of go over the machinery and make sure everything's ready to go for when the flagman waves the green. But one of the most enjoyable things we do when we've got everything else caught up and we can't work on anything else is go to the timber and post some more deer stands and deer blinds and improve the ones that we already have. It's one of the most enjoyable parts of being in the country.
Yeah, no question about it. No question. Hey, Andrew, what's happening down there in Northwest Missouri that everybody needs to know about?
Hey, I'll tell you something, and I think people might want to take a look at it. Just last week, we had I went to a couple of little towns and we had a speaker come in. His name is Stephen Mitchell from Calico Rock, Arkansas. And you know, earlier we were talking about rural development. It is really a neat story. This little town of 1,000 people, they were down to their last store and they got people together. And now they have every storefront except for 2 in their little hometown operating again. And I was going to tell people, you know, if on Facebook, if they go to Missouri Community Betterment, scroll down, it's like October 8th, but there's a video.
it is really good. You don't know how many people I've had watch that and they say, wow, that is neat. I'd love to do that. And it was just local rural folks getting together and saying, hey, we're gonna do something good. And that was really inspiring. And I was surprised. We had a lot of people see that video or go listen to him. He just kind of doing a little thing on revitalizing your hometown. So that's what we did during the rain delay, I guess. I had time to do that. That was kind of inspiring. So,
okay, what Facebook page is that again?
Oh, I just went on Missouri Community Betterment because I happened to be down there at their conference they had this week in October 8th is what I'm looking at. Missouri Community Betterment on October 8th, they had a post. It'll have my name there, but it's actually a piece we shot for American Countryside is what it is. Is what they ended up using because I'd heard about this story and thought, hey, we need to tell this story. So
Very cool.
I think it's a neat video.
Very cool. Ryan, what's going up in South Dakota that everybody needs to know about?
Well, the weather has been top of the mind for everybody around here, I guess. And, you know, back to your question about what do farmers do when they can't harvest. And I'd like to tell you a story about, we all got together and had a great time, went to the bar or something one night. But actually, last week when we couldn't go, I was in Target in Aberdeen with my wife, and I ran into four other farmers that I knew there in about the 15 minutes we were there. So I guess what we do up here is go to Target, apparently. But yeah, I think everybody's just itching to get off the farm and go do something else. They were so desperate to get off the farm, they'd even follow their wives to Target. So that's, I guess,
I love it.
Out of boredom.
Love it. Rock, got about 15 seconds. What's going on over there?
I like seeing what our young farmers and our Farm Bureau organizations are doing in our communities and the Illinois Farm Bureau, spreading our message and about the way we produce our food in a safe manner for the American consumer.
Very cool. Guys, thank you so much. Ryan, good luck up there.
Thank you. Yep.
All right. Rock, same to you, buddy.
Talk later, Chip.
Andrew, we'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you.
All right, that is Andrew McCray, Missouri, Rock Hetchnig, Illinois, Ryan Wagner in South Dakota. Come back this afternoon for AgriTalk After the Bell. Davis Michelson and I will be on the road, but Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain has got a great show planned. His guest will be Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. And tomorrow on AgriTalk, Ted Seifert from Zaner Ag Hedge will be in as guest host. Y'all have a great day.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Thanks to NK Seeds for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your local NK retailer about adding a science-driven boost to your seed portfolio.